नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद् भागवतम् सेकंड कैनन चैप्टर 6 Arusha Sutta Text 34 Nabharati menga mrisho palakshate
Nabharati menga mrisho palakshate
Navaigvachinne manaso mishagati
Navaigvachinne manaso mishagati
Na me hrishi kani patam cha satpate
Na me hrishi kani patam cha satpate
Yan me hradav kauti Yan me hradav tanjavatadrito hari
Yan me hradav tanjavatadrito hari
Bharati venga mishopa lakshate
Bharati venga mishopa lakshate
Navai kvachin me manaso mishagati
Navai kvachin me manaso mishagati
Name hrishikari patam cha satpate
Name hrishikari patam cha satpate
Yan me hrdao kanjavata drito hari
Yan me hrdao kanjavata drito hari of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter. Purple. Lord Brahma is the original speaker of Vedic wisdom to Narada. And Narada is the distributor of transcendental knowledge all over the world through his various disciples, like Vyasadeva and others. The followers of Vedic wisdom accept the statements of Brahmaji as gospel truth, and transcendental knowledge is thus being distributed all over the world by the process of disciplic succession from time immemorial, since the beginning of the creation. Lord Brahma is the perfect, liberated, living being within the material world. And any sincere student of transcendental knowledge must accept the words and statements of Brahmaji as infallible. The Vedic knowledge is infallible because it comes down directly from the Supreme Lord unto the heart of Brahma. And since he is the most perfect living being, Brahmaji is always correct to the letter. And this is because Lord Brahma is a great devotee of the Lord, who has earnestly accepted the lotus feet of the Lord as the supreme truth. In the Brahma Samhita, which is compiled by Brahmaji, he repeats the aphorism, Rovindam Adi Purusham Tamahavachana. I am a worshipper of the original personality Godhead, Govinda, the five of the Lord. So whatever he says, whatever he thinks, and whatever he does, normally in his mood, are to be accepted as true because of his direct and very intimate connection with Govinda, the primeval Lord. Sri Govinda, who pleasingly accepts the loving transcendental service of his devotees, gives all protection to the words and actions of his devotees. The Lord declares in Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya Pratijanihi. O son of Kunti, please declare it. The Lord asks Arjuna to declare. And why? Because sometimes the declaration of Govinda himself may seem contradictory to mundane creatures, but the mundaner will never find any contradiction in the words of the Lord's devotees. The devotees are especially protected by the Lord so that they may remain infallible. Therefore, the process of devotional service always begins in the service of the devotee who appears in succession. Translation again, this is Lord Brahma speaking to his son Narada. O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, with great zeal, whatever I say has never proved to have been false, nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to man. Om Gana Timidam Dasya Gana Janasla Gaya Chakshu Rupa. This is Lord Brahma giving his personal testimony of the effects of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is not a belief system, although, as we've often explained, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if you simply just believe in Krishna or have some good feelings of respect and appreciation for Krishna, there'll be benefit. But Krishna wants to offer much more. Those who actually invest in the process of Bhakti Yoga, they can experience the personal transformations that Lord Brahma is describing here. And this is what should be our goal, to personally transform. That requires humility. That means you have to understand that the way you are now is not the way you want to remain. You want to make progress to a higher level of your existence, which may be unknown to you. In this way, I'm sure you can see that people who are attached to their body and mind, they cannot dedicate themselves to Bhakti Yoga, because attachment to the body and mind means attachment to illusion, attachment to what you think is the status quo. Now let's look squarely at what you can be attached to when you're attached to the body and mind. You may say, well, I just want things to remain as they are. You know, I am who I am, and my relations are what they are, and the world is what it is, and so, you know, just go with it. but what are you actually going with? What are you actually accommodating? You're actually accommodating the degrading effects of time. That's what you are embracing, accommodating. The material world and all that's in it is constantly in the process of decay. So, by your accepting that as well, it's the way it is, you know, then you are accepting suffering. But it's hard to see that because the truth lies hidden behind the curtain of Maya. That's why you may feel complacent, sluggish, because the curtain of Maya prevents you from seeing the ugly truth of what's actually going on. Everything material undergoes six processes of transformation, known in Sanskrit as the Shadvikar. Things come into existence, they grow, they maintain themselves at some middle point for a short time. They can reproduce, then they diminish and become extinct. This is the real naked truth of material existence. But how many of you feel that truth about your bodies? Now, especially when you're in your 20s, you feel that, you know, this body is like a status quo thing. You know, it's just what it is, you know? Me and, you know, this body. When you're in your 20s, you don't think that this body, which is the so-called status quo, is actually a decaying mechanism. It's like a bomb with a fuse on it, and you don't know how long the fuse is. But you're assuming it's going to be a long fuse. And then when you're in your 70s, or whatever the average age is for death, then the bomb will go off. That's what everybody means. Therefore, you've got so much time to be yourself the way you know you are now. This is ignorance. You don't know how long the fuse is until the bomb of death goes off. You have no idea, but you speculate. Everyone's body is like a clock. So if you've ever been in a room with one of those clocks that tick, that's what this body is like. So when bodies are embracing each other, they're just actually two clocks embracing each other. That's all that's going on. The body is a clock, and it's ticking away. But you don't see it as that. You see it as the status quo, the way things are. In this way, the illusion goes on. Under the influence of the body and mind, you have to romp here and there. Oh, I think I'll travel to this place. I think I'll travel to that place. I have this to do for my body. I have that to do for people in relation to my body. In this way, the whole life is wasted. People don't have the strength to resist this degradation. They don't. They're trapped in a pit and they can't climb out on their own. In order to climb out of this hole, you have to have at least some desire to personally transform. Krishna consciousness is for those who, one way or another, come to understand the way I am cannot remain. I need to move to a higher understanding or higher experience of myself. What we think is our self-identity now is just a product of rules of material nature, especially passion and ignorance. There's nothing very nice about what we think is the self right now. What we think is the self is just a bundle of desires that cause us problems, a wild mind that drags us here and there, and a body that's just like a clock ticking away. The bomb goes off. That's what we think is the self. When you think about it, what's so wonderful about your mind? Just think about your mind. The is so wonderful about it in of itself when it's absorbed in material life. It's a wild thing, this mind. I'm sure you've all had experiences of thinking one thing so strongly with your mind and then finding out it's not true. Like maybe with your mind you got paranoid about somebody. You just had it all worked out in your mind how that person had done something to hurt you. And then later you find out it wasn't true. Everyone's had that experience. Or with your mind, you convince yourself that this is a nice person. This person is really caring for me. And then later you find out that everybody else saw the signs how this person was abusing me. This is all the work of the mind. It can make heaven out of hell and hell out of heaven. So when you think about it, what is so precious about the mind? Certainly you can see there's nothing so precious about the body. But we're more attached to our own minds than the body. The body is actually the physical manifestation of the mind, according to your mentality in the past life, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Yam-yam bhavismaran bhavam chasam te kale tam tam nivaiti kaunteya sadhat. According to your mentality in your previous life, you get a particular gross body in this life. So the body and mind are closely related. The body is the expression of the mind. Therefore, in the bodily conception of life, people freak out when they're going to lose their body. It's the mind that's freaking out, because the body is the physical manifestation of the mind. Now, how are we going to act in such a way that we can get beyond the body and the mind? That is the goal of every intelligent person. That goal requires personal transformation. In order for there to be personal transformation, there has to be a willingness to be transformed. Otherwise, it's very difficult if you have no willingness. So when people come here, we're always presenting to them the need to personally transform and the technology for personal transformation. Some people are content to be the way they are in ignorance. Others are not. Or some people, they think they're content with ignorance, but by good association they can gradually wake up from this drunken stupor. This is what it means to introduce Krishna consciousness to others. Out of compassion, you try to find the ways and means that they will take up this personal transformation. Compassion begins with yourself. First, you have to be compassionate upon yourself. And then you can be compassionate upon others. As long as you are content with the way you are, that's just me, you know. What more can I do? You know, I'm just the sum total of desires and experiences and personal likes and dislikes. What's wrong with that? As long as you're content with being like that, you won't rise above the tragic level of material existence. No matter how nice you think the tragedy is, it'll be a tragedy. That is the truth. So what we're trying to do is get the young ones, say young ones, those under 30, to understand that life is not a cabaret. Not cabaret, is it? That's very difficult. Let's say a young guy like Tim, try to get him to see life's not a cabaret. But it's tough because, you know, you feel young and healthy, right? You feel like you got so many years ahead of you, the body is strong. The girls are out there just waiting, right? Everyone thinks like that. You can get a job if you really want to, right? Yeah. It's a big world to go travel and see. So to convince him that life is not a cabaret, it's difficult. He's caught up in a certain time frame. But don't think that just because he gets older, automatically it's going to be easier to convince him. Let's say he becomes Tracy's age. In the early 30s, right? Well, you're not old, you're not an old lady yet, but you're thinking, my responsibilities. When you're in your early 20s, and you know, you don't have to worry about responsibilities, but you know, you're just caught up in your own body and mind and being so-called free. When you're actually totally a slave of your passions, but you think it's just being free. Now, it's not automatic. It's just because he reaches 30, wisdom will come. Now, when you're in your early 30s, then your false ego takes off in a different direction. Now, when I was 20, I was so carefree and irresponsible, but now I'm understanding what it means to be mature. I have many responsibilities, many debts and obligations, and others are expecting things of me, and it's very mature to be, you know, that one accepts these burdens. It's a sign of, you know, being a good person. You know, I want to share. I want to be with others. I want to accept the burdens of others. I want to give them my burdens. You know, that's what it's all about. Then when you reach 40 or 50, do you think wisdom automatically comes? No. The body starts to decline. And you won't accept that truth. Therefore, so many people in their mid-40s, they have crises, midlife crises. Men suddenly leave their families. Women suddenly leave their families. Because they realize, it's my last chance. I told you before, there are books published about how to have a last fling in your, you know, in the last years of your 40s. The book gives various techniques, you know, for how people of that age can, you know, get other people of the same mentality together for a last fling. Have a Beatles party. Play Beatles records from the 60s and 70s. That's a good excuse to get people that same mentality together. You heard of this, Tracy? Yes. Have a champagne party. The same, different excuses for the same thing. Just like younger ones will go to a, you know, go to a pub or a party, and everyone knows what the purpose is, intoxication versus sex. Similarly, when they're in their late 40s, they have to just come up with different excuses.
Come over to my house, we're having a Beatles party.
But the whole point is how to find suitable partners for a last minute fling. I'll never forget, I was speaking in Perth, and there were some lawyers in my discussion group. Lawyers, they were ladies. They were in their late 40s. So I was speaking very nobly about the need for purification, how we should understand that the quest of our life is for purity, and we have to adopt the appropriate techniques for purification. Otherwise, there's no question of pleasure. I'll never forget one of the lawyers, this lady, she's about 49, she just put it out. Purification? I'm 49 years old. I finally got rid of my husband. I'm ready to go for it. So where's the wisdom that you're supposed to have gotten since you're 20 years old or 30 years old? Where's the wisdom? There's no wisdom possible in the grip of material nature. This is what you have to understand. No wisdom is possible as long as you are under the grip of material nature. Now, how to get out from under the spell of material nature? Everyone knows, you know, the concept of being caught in a spell. Well, that's what it's like to live material life. You're under the spell of material nature. Everything seems to make sense, although actually it's totally ridiculous. This is what it's like to be under the spell of material nature. Everything seems like it makes sense. Isn't that so? But if you really would allow yourself to think about it, it's totally ludicrous. So therefore you have a mass conspiracy not to think about things too deeply. Even you can go to the university and study philosophy, but still you'll never penetrate to the real core issues in a way that will threaten some personal transformation of yourself. But this is what we're up against. We are up against the deadly effects of association with the material nature. Under the influence of material nature, you babble so many things. Yeah, I'm going to be doing this, or, you know, I feel like that, or, yeah, you know. Like I was talking to one very nice person yesterday. She was saying how she came back from traveling around the world, now she's going to the university. So I just said, why are you going to the university? She said, well, it's had to do something. I said, but what do you expect to gain out of going to university? Something to do. So this is how we're willing to just waste time with our life. In this person's case, fortunately, she was at least willing to accept the possibility that this is ridiculous and that she should be doing something else. Most people can't even answer that honestly. Why are you doing something? Well, I have to do something, you know. Most people will make so many rationalizations. It's necessary that I do this for the good of society. It's necessary for the people. It's necessary, you know, for my personal growth that I, you know, I get money, I get knowledge, I travel in order to experience different cultures. Generally, people come up with excuses like that. But to simply say, well, you know, I got to do something, that's a rare level of honesty. So, our commitment should be to the process of bhakti yoga so that we can become transformed. Transformation can only occur when you get out from under the grip of material nature. As long as you're under the grip of material nature, you can't think straight. You can babble so many things. You can have so many university degrees, but you cannot think straight when you're under the grip of material nature. The simplest things you can't see because you're blinded just by association with that material nature. In this way, the process of bhakti yoga begins with getting you out of the control of material nature. That requires proper techniques for living. Therefore, we ask people, please clean up your life. Then you can see. As long as your life is not clean, you can't see. And that Lord Brahma here is giving his personal testimony. Because I've taken up the process of connecting to Krishna, my mind is not impeded. My senses are never degraded. What degrades the mind and senses? Temporary attachment to matter, Lord Brahma is saying. We think that attachments are an innocent thing, right? Yeah, I've got this attachment, that attachment. And so what? It's just me, you know, and my particular proclivities and my particular hobbies and desires. It's all part of life. How many of us can see that attachment degrades? You can only have that vision when you are a little bit detached from matter. Then you can see what's really going on. I'm sure you've all had experience of how when someone is subjectively involved in a situation, they can't really see what's going on. I'm sure you've had experience of some of your friends being in unhealthy relationships, abusive relationships, but your friend can't see because just too absorbed. But everybody else can see. How can she be with that guy? How can he be with her? Doesn't she see what's going on? But because there's attachment to matter, your intelligence is polluted. No matter how great a professor or great military leader you can be, no matter how clear-headed you're supposed to be about so many things, when there's attachment to matter, you can't see clearly. Basically, the problem that we are dealing with is Some people are attached to passion, and some people are attached to ignorance. You'll see both types here in Wellington. Some people are just attached to doing nothing, just drifting along. It may be hard for some of you to believe, but some people are like that. They're just attached to drifting along and doing nothing. And they think that's a nice life. Others are attached to endeavoring very powerfully to fulfill their desires. Both types of attachment will get you into trouble. But what else are you to do? We are presenting to people that the technology of Krishna consciousness is what they should be doing, and they will see the effects. But they have to have a willingness to be transformed. Just a little bit even provides a doorway to so many possibilities. And those who have a big desire to be transformed, they can do so much for themselves and others. Lord Brahma is demonstrating that connection to Krishna has practical, visible results. You see differently, you think differently, because you become under the influence of the internal potency, the spiritual potency of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains he has different potencies, the material potency and the spiritual energy. If you change your shelter, if you stop taking shelter of the material energy and learn how to take shelter of the spiritual energy, then your existence changes. In other words, you've got to change your location. Just like if you're living in Wellington, you expect the weather to be one way. If you go to another place, you expect the weather to be another way. Under the influence of the material energy, you should expect your life will be a certain way. Now, if you change the influence of nature that's acting upon you, then your life will change. So you've got to adjust. You've got to change how you are situated. Then, once you change your environment from the material energy to the spiritual energy, your life changes. That's the easy way to do it. You've got to move out of one house and move into the other house. Instead of taking shelter of the illusory material energy, you take shelter of the spiritual energy. That's all that Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita. How to change the influence that you're operating under. But if you partake in temporary attachment to matter, you won't get out of the material shelter. There'll be no escape. If you take up the processes of spiritual life, bhakti yoga, then you become situated in the Krishna influence. That is the definition of a mahatma, a great soul, given in Bhagavad Gita. Mahatmanastu mam bhakta daiva bhakti masu vajantina nirmanasa gyatta dhamma. Krishna says the mahatma is living under the influence of the internal potency, the devotional potency of the Lord. This is what we want to do. This is the opportunity we want to give to everyone. This is the opportunity that we hope you all take. This process of Krishna consciousness is coming down through a chain of persons who are far superior than the persons available on earth now. You're hearing the personal testimony of Lord Brahma as he's speaking to Narada Muni. They are persons, but they're not like persons within your experience. Their abilities are far beyond the persons you know. In this way, Srimad Bhagavatam widens your perspective on the cosmos. There's so much going on in this universe that we don't know. But the Srimad Bhagavatam puts you in contact with all these extraordinary things. And the most extraordinary thing is that these persons are giving you the process by which you can escape material existence. And what will be the proof? The proof will be you yourself. Well, isn't that fair enough? Everyone wants a fair deal. Sometimes you get angry at the world because you think you're not getting a fair deal. How could there be a God because, you know, so many people are getting a raw deal? Everyone wants things to be fair. Like when we were going into the steam room yesterday, the swimming pool. You know, we had these business guys there talking. They're obviously these kind of business guy jocks, athletes. So they were, every other word had to be a curse word, you know, it was just part of the little macho thing. They had their own businesses. They looked like they also probably played rugby a bit on the weekends. So every other word was a curse word, and then they were talking about their businesses. And, yeah, don't employ anybody anymore. You know, it's not worth it to have employees. Just put them all on contract. You don't have to pay so many benefits. Yeah. Talking like that. And then so then one guy said, yeah, you know, that's what I do. I just put them on contract. I don't hire anybody for long term. All you do is get certain information from them. You send it to the government, you know, contract worker. Had one guy, he wouldn't give me that information, so I just said, no work for you. Yeah. The other guy said, yeah, fair call, fair call. So everyone likes to imagine there's some kind of sense of fair dealings in this world. That's what they want. You won't find fairness under the shelter of the material energy. That's what's making you distressed. You're looking for fairness and justice in the wrong place. If you want fairness and justice, then you have to get under the shelter of the spiritual energy. Krishna's fairness and justice is such that even amidst material deterioration, still Krishna is there unwavering. In other words, don't blame Krishna for material deterioration. It's the nature of matter to deteriorate. But while that's going on, still Krishna is there completely, regardless of the changes of matter. In other words, don't think that by becoming a devotee of Krishna, that means taking shelter of the spiritual energy, don't think that the processes of material deterioration will stop. That's impossible. But what will happen is you'll be situated differently. So while the inevitable processes of material deterioration are going on, you'll be developing your spiritual existence under the influence of the internal hopes of the Lord, diving into the deep. This is your only solution in life, to take shelter of the spiritual energy, because nothing will stop the laws of material deterioration. If you're smart and can figure this out when you're young, then you have a whole lifetime of preparing and advancing in taking shelter of the spiritual energy. The younger you can understand this, the better. Because it's going to take some time to get yourself firmly out of the control of the external energy. It's a career. The younger you begin, the better. The younger you begin, the better. It's like I was talking to this young lady last night. She was 22. I said, well, I was also 22 when I came to these realizations. So why not take up a career that's actually going to benefit yourself? And then you can benefit others. This willingness to transform, this appetite for transformation, is what distinguishes those who can move ahead in Krishna consciousness and those who just kind of hang out. We don't mind people hanging out in Krishna consciousness, because however you contact Krishna is all good. But at the same time, people should move on to higher levels of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, the material energy is acting and will drag you down. You have to have impetus. You have to move forward. You're not living in a static atmosphere. Under the shelter of the material energy, you're being constantly dragged. Have you noticed that effect in this world? It constantly drags down. So you have to be constantly going the other way. There's a tendency in this world for all your good endeavors to be foiled. You make a plan. Okay, I'm going to chant every morning. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And you notice there's resistance. That's the way this world is constructed. That resistance is there for a good reason. That resistance is to let you know, until you completely get out of the clutches of matter, there's going to be no peace. You can't compromise. That's why that resistance is there. It's letting you know no compromise is possible. It's either one way or the other. The intelligent person uses that resistance as impetus to get out from the shelter of material energy. We're trying to get people to take control of their lives again. And that's hard work. I think we've explained this before. People actually don't want to have control of their life. They want to just disperse their life energies among so many imaginary goals and pursuits. You know, I have to do this. And we have to think a certain way. And certain things must be done. And this way they disperse the energies of their life. You know, they can't really give an intelligent reason once they think about it. You know, but it's just that way. Why? Well, that's just how it is. People expect certain things of me. Then that's what you call love. You're for real with me half the time. You think you got a good deal. No one knows what reality is, because when you're identifying with the body and mind, you can't be for real with someone. But still people have this feeling that they like a person to be for real with them. You can only be for real in relation to Krishna. So personal relationships with Krishna in the center can be for real, because the deciding thing is always Krishna's pleasure. Then there can be reality. When we're all thinking about Krishna's pleasure, then we're being for real amongst one another. If I can get you to think about Krishna's pleasure, then I'm being for real with you. In all circumstances, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. That is an unlimited, eternal fact. Therefore, if we want reality, we relate to Krishna's enjoyment. Now, what happens when you try to relate to your own enjoyment or someone else's enjoyment? That can never be reality that way. And everyone has tried relating to someone else's enjoyment, relating to your own attempts to enjoy. There's no reality that way. But if we all learn to relate to Krishna's pleasure, then there's reality amongst all of us. And that's what you find refreshing about spiritual association. Sadhu Sangha means the association, the Sangha of those who are in relation to Krishna. That relationship with Krishna provides the reality. Therefore, you can be free. It's not just some sentimental belief. We're all believers. We're true believers. Now, it's true that because the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is fact, even if people just have some religious sentiment, there's benefit. But Krishna wants to make much more available to you than just sentiment. But you have to be willing to undergo personal transformation. That means regaining your life, recapturing your life from its being under the control of matter. And the positive, situating your life in devotional service. We want everyone to participate in this network of reality, acting in relation to Krishna's pleasure, rather than wasting time trying to please our temporary bodies and minds. The more we find out about Krishna, the more we'll feel secure about relating to Krishna's pleasure. The more we're related to Krishna's pleasure, the more we'll be real amongst ourselves. Is there any questions? Regulation. Steady your life by doing the same thing at the same time every day. Rise early in the morning. Take rest at the same time at night. Be very clean. The mode of goodness can be seen in how you use your senses. Someone in the mode of goodness eats properly, sleeps properly. They use all their senses properly. So that's where you should look for it. The mode of goodness is the most fertile material situation for getting the seed of devotional life. The mode of goodness is not spiritual life, but it's the most favorable circumstance. And you don't find those favorable circumstances. Because society is dedicated to passion and ignorance. It's like, you want the mode of goodness, then organize your life for very refined use of your senses. Keep your environment clean, regulated living habits. It's also the best thing for your health. Careful how you eat, careful how you sleep. You're not married, so you don't have to be careful how you mate. That's the mode of goodness. Every sense activity is precise. The first step is regulation. Rise at the same time every morning. Go to sleep at the same time at night. Eat at the same times during the day. Then gradually you'll see your life start to not appear so wild. And that gives your mind a chance to settle in. Stay away from passionate things. Demoniac society makes passion look very attractive. The one devotee in Australia was telling me he's going to the university. He's married and it's a way to support his family. So he's going to the university to be a lawyer. But he knows he's just doing this, for means of supporting his household life. But his mother keeps saying to him,
if you're going to go to the university, you've got to be passionate about it. You really got to get into it. Just put your whole life into it with passion.
That's kind of the mantras of today. Anyone else has parents or friends who say that? So she tells you that's the way you should be. Then parents think they have a successful child. My son is really passionate about life. Everything is upside down these days.
like I was talking to one couple yesterday.
So I said, well,
you guys have been together, you're living together now. When are you finally just going to get married? If you want to practice for some else, you should be together, you should be married. There should be some commitment. And so they thought, well, we would. It's just our parents, you know. It's like the reverse. 20 years ago,
the parents would be very loath to have their children live together without marriage. But these guys, their parents, don't want them to marry because they say, no, you should live together for a long time and see if you're right for each other. Then there can be marriage many years in the future. Everything is upside down. We would marry, but our parents, you know, they're against it. They're against you getting married without having... We haven't lived together for 5 years. See, everything is upside down. Previously, the parents would be against their children living together. You hear people say that, we can't really shack up because our parents are really, disturbed. Now it's, we have to shack up, otherwise our parents will be disturbed.
This is how crazy things are. Anyone else have experiences like that?
You try to control your senses, or you get discouraged by your parents?
Yeah?
What do they tell you? How do they encourage you? Yeah, do you ever ask them, what's the purpose of drinking?
No.
Why don't you do that? They never discuss the purpose of it? What is the purpose anyway? Yeah. Be convivial. So you should ask them, why do you want me to drink? What's the purpose? Is it that you're saying that it's impossible to have proper relationships without, alcohol? So people get very involved. You have to ask it in an innocent way. You notice how sometimes I can really get away with asking the most, exposing questions, but just in a nonchalant way. So you have to do like that.
Why are we drinking?
And you just say it in a real non-attached way, they'll blurt out. It's just so we can talk. And then, who? Why did you say that? In this way, you can give them some instruction, and at the same time, you can learn something too. Ask what their reasons are. Say something like, yeah, I thought about drinking sometimes. I'm curious what the reason is. Sometimes you catch them off guard, they'll get really enthusiastic. Oh, the reason, We want to talk, and it makes you feel kind of good feeling in your stomach, and and they'll just go on for a while, and all of a sudden they'll catch themselves. Ooh. They'll notice you're not into it. We revealed too much about, material existence. He's not a member of the cult. That's what it is. They're mad because you're not a cult member. Material existence is a cult. And they're angry that you're trying to drop out. It's just a clash that goes on all the time. You're going to have to get used to it. Between those who've taken shelter of the spiritual nature and those who've taken shelter of the material nature. Like that, it's even Lord Brahma's time. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Vabhuta Sarga Lokesmin, Daiva Asra Evacha. There are always two classes of entities in this world, the divine and the demoniac. So this division is not only now, it's always been like that. It's just that right now, those who are under the demoniac influence are predominant. So just ask them.
do them and yourself a favor. You'll get a kick out of their answers. What else? How else do they try to influence you? They want you to be carnivorous. Well, they put various delicacies under your nose. Roast leg of lamb. Fried chicken breasts. You should just, you know, present that you have an open attitude. If they can give you a good reason why you should drink, you'll do it. Is it good for my health? Is it good for my intelligence? Just give me a good reason. That's how you fluster them. Then they stop bugging you real quick. Is it known that alcohol is good for the health? Is it good for increasing the intelligence? What are they going to say? Well, it just makes for good vibes, good relationships. Then you got them trapped. Whatever they say, they're damned. That's the funny thing about it. Any vice of Kali Yuga, no matter what they say, they're damned. So, no matter what they say, you have them. And that way you do yourself a favor and you do them a favor by pointing these things out. Anyone else under some kind of social pressure? Don't you know how to make jokes about meat-eaters?
I was born from scratch.
It's very easy, you know. If you just like walk past a butcher shop and note down how they describe all the parts of meat they sell. I forgot, I used to know them. Rump steak. You take a slice out of something rump and broil it. What else? Anyone remember? Loin chop. You just take someone's loin and you just take a chop out of it. Anything else? What? Sheep brains? That's a New Zealand delicacy? Sheep brains. Oh, I didn't know about that. How do they do? Sheep's kidneys? You know what kidneys are for? You know what the function of a kidney in the body is? What? Yeah. It's like, you know, would you go in a car and eat an oil filter? You ever seen an oil filter? Even the ladies have seen oil filters, right? You know, so that's what the kidney is. That's what kidneys and livers are, they're filters. Sheep's brains. No one ever told me that. So one of the hidden delicacies of TV life. Hmm? Brawn? It's called brawn, is that the? That's the intestines, isn't it? Brawn, huh? Sheep's brains and white sauce. This is a special Christmas delicacy? So you can ask your mother, and any sheep's brains tonight? Sold them on sale.
Yep.
30 for 10 bucks.
Yep.
Yes, these things are funny, but we ourselves, besides laughing with compassion about these things, we have to do something about ourselves. We should be able to see the need for getting our life from out of the control of the illusory energy and putting it under Krishna's spiritual energy. We can laugh about these things, but we also have to feel a need for our own personal transformation. And in all respects, we take our life out of the control of the illusory energy. From top to bottom, rescue our life back. So many, especially the young ones, younger ones, you don't have any all-day social responsibilities like job or family, yet I see the inability to use time properly. What's going to happen if you enter the working world? How will you ever deal with yourself? So many people come here, young people come here, they're not working, they're in between school terms, or they're going to school only a little bit. So much time they have, but they can't, you know, find time during the day for their spiritual life. That means you're being ripped off by material nature. If you can't do it while you have nothing to do, what do you think is going to happen when society fills your day with all sorts of illusory responsibilities? First, be responsible to yourself. Then you can be responsible for others. You want to care for others? Very nice. We'll teach you. But first, you have to be responsible to yourself. Otherwise, you're not helping others. You're just perpetuating the illusion. We want you to care for others, but you have to first care for yourself. Clean yourself up first, then you can help others. All right.
Hare, 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 Hare.
Go ahead.